session number 16266, Reel 2. Mr. Broom, Reel 2. You said you knocked on the door.
Yes, I knocked on the door, and eventually a voice shouted out, "Who's there?" I said, "R.A.R." And the boats went back, and he opened the door, and he had a shotgun there. Of course, this was invasion days. And I said, "It's all right, R.A.R." And he rang, "Oh, you better come in then." So in you go, a cup of tea, and his wife came down. This is 1 o'clock in the morning. And he said, "What do you want to do now?" "Well," that's the obvious thing, in the nearest police station there's two more, the pilot and the air gun around somewhere. So he said, "Well, that's not far away," and he got out his old car, and away we went. Now, when we got that police station, I think it's Ashton under 9, I'm not certain, the air gunner was already there. He landed in the main street of Ashton under 9 at the foot of a police constable. We waited a bit, and eventually Costello Bowen came in as well. So that three of us, so of course, rang up Swanton Moor and told them we were safe, and they said, "Well, hang on there, we'll let RAF ring May know, and they'll be out in the morning." So they came out and fetched us, went to ring May, medical, etc. And we were there, we went out and viewed the crash the next day. The crash on the edge of the Pennines. We knew we were a fairly open country, and thought, "Well, glad we're in that lot." And we had two or three days there, and we visited out a family at Withenshaw. Now, the chap there, because he used to like a drink, and he took us down the pub every evening and introduced us, so we never had to buy any beer at all. I didn't know what to do. And eventually we boarded a train and right across the Pennines back to Swanton Morley. Instantly, another medical and said, "Well, you better have 3 weeks' leave." And when we got back, they said, "Right, we've got new crews from OTU, and there's about 8 or 9 of the crews of your order brigade, because we've been on the go since, I know it was a bit of a phony war, but from September until the November, only a near year." And I was posted to 13 OTU, at the Blenheim OTU at RAF Bicester, Oxfordshire.
What was wrong with your Blenheim on that night when you bailed out?
Well, we got hit, and in the petrol tanks, there were no self-sealing tanks in those days, and when we'd been, I think, 5 hours or something, it said on the logbook, and when we got there, we couldn't get the valley, and so petrol was just about last of the end of the war, and we were in open country, away you go.
So you then had a period as an instructor.
Yes.
Before you went back to an operational squadron.
Yes, we were there from I was instructing on the Ansons as a navigation instructor, and from the pupils that come from Canada, the pilots as well. They, Costello Bowen was on the dual flight instruction mode, and the air gun was there eventually. Now, and then I went to the bombing flight where the pupils there did came there sort of independently, and the navigators were there a fortnight on the Anson flight, and then the pilot was on the dual flight, and the air gunner was somewhere, and eventually they all come into the crew room on what they call the operational training flight, and they were put in a room then and told, "Look, crew up among yourselves, people you like, and let us know your crews." And that was how you were crewed up, and so you didn't say, "You fly with you, you fly with you." You had people that were compatible with one another, and it made a bit. And this is where I first met Air Marshal Sir Ivor Broom. He was a sergeant in April 41 when he came through, and someone said, "There's Sergeant Broom on the course," and we had a word together. Of course, the next time I saw him was, he went away, and people know his career. And of course, I was eventually to meet up with him later on.
So what was the period of your instructing from November 1940 to?
To January 42. Now, when I was there, Squadron Leader Sevier came to me and said, "Look, You're coming out with me out to Malta with I'm going back. So I said, well, I don't think I am. When I go back, I want to go back under my pilot I've been with all the time. So he said, well, you can't do that. So I just wrote to Stella Byrne, who saw the stage commander, Captain Kyle, who said, no, he goes back with his own pilot. Now, this... When Scotty DeCivi went out there, he led a raid, and Ivor Broom was on that raid. And when they were going into the target, Sivia turned quickly and crashed another Blenheim and got killed. So I'd have been gone on the first stop if I'd have gone with him. But then that sort of fate. On the other hand, if I'd have been navigating, he might not have had to turn. So that's how life goes, isn't it, really? You don't decide it yourself. Now, we heard a rumour that 105 Squadron were getting this new Mosquito. And there'd been little stores around what a wonderful aircraft it is. And the CO was Wing Commander Peter Simmons. And, of course, we're connected. Bistro sent their people to a two group. And Costello Byrne went up to see him. And he said, yes, come along with us. And it was all fixed there. And Costello Byrne himself in January 42 arrived at Horsham St. Faith, Mosquitoes. And of course, there's a lot of tests to carry out. You'll see in the logbook high altitude tests for petrol consumption, right, fly right up to Fair Isle and bombing and photography. And we were there when Norris was bombed, and I took photographs of it after. And then we also had some Mars Masters and a Tiger Moth and short nose planes, because we only had a half dozen Mosquitoes, and to keep the people in flying training. Now, the first operation they decided to do with the Mosquitoes was after the 1,000 bomber raid on Cologne, which is May the 31st, 1942.
And is this back with 105 Squadron?
This is the 105 Squadron again.
And did you go on this raid?
The first aircraft took off, which was Squadron Outshot. It's 5:40 in the morning after the 1,000 bombers had gone back. Pilot Officer Kenmarsh took off about 7:40, and he didn't return. We found out after he was shot down over the Dutch Islands by the Shell. And we took off at 11:40, and we were supposed to photograph and drop the bombs there. But the smoke was so dense from the cloud cover that we couldn't take any flight. But we dropped the bombs into Cologne to soak the fires up. That was the first one.
Then I think 25th of June, next month, there was an operation, a dusk attack on Schleswig-Jagel.
Yes, now that was the night of the 1,000 bomber raid on Bremen. And they decided to send the Mosquitoes from 105 to attack German night fighter aerodromes. And the one that we took was Schleswig-Jagel. And we went bombed, and there was a row of 88s lined up, and we dropped our bombs there at low level. And that was when we came back. That was the first night landings the Mosquitoes had done.
What did you think of the Mosquito on first introduction to it?
Well, it was like stepping up, as I said early on, from the 410 to perhaps a better one. It was like stepping into a Rolls Royce. Of course, they did have two Rolls Royce engines. Modern. And there was heating in there as well. Because those Blenheims were bitterly cold.
And then, the next operation that you remember, we come to 2nd of July, an attack on Flensburg.
That's right. The submarine yard at Flensburg, 2nd of July. The group captain, MacDonald, led it, and the wing commander was Oakeshott, who was on there, and five of us went. In low-level formation, they thought perhaps the Blenheim could, the Mosquito could get away with a low-level operation quite easily. So we went to the submarine yard at Flensburg. We struck north of the place and went down, and They talk about radar now, but in those days, it'd still be applicable. If you see fishing boats out in the sea 20 miles away, nobody's going to take any notice of them, but all they got in there, they had there, was a little radio set for the Morse key. So it doesn't matter how low you fly, formation of mosquitoes flying 20 miles out towards the enemy coast. And so we turned into the submarine yards, so everything opened up, there were ships in the harbour. The group captain was shot down just after we bombed. Then we split up as we were supposed to do. We went over the town, Costello Bowen and me, and turned away, and the fighters then came, and they shot, Wing Commander Oak shot down, and the other three of us hailed out in the middle of the North Sea and got away with it, but we did lose the chase commander and the wing commander.
How frightened did you feel on that attack?
You know, it's a funny thing, I was never frightened. I took it all for granted. I can honestly say that throughout the entire lot, I was never...
Did you feel that you had a charmed life?
No, I think you'll find if you think about it, it's not going to happen to you. I think it's been said many times, but it's probably true.
For the 16th of July, an attack on Vegasack, you put unable to find target, bad weather.
Bad weather, yes. So we turned back. That was a low level.
But you said you attacked four other targets.
Yes, we attacked four other ones, but the bombs didn't release because, of course, the mosquito was here then. And
then the next one was 22nd of July on Munster. Not completed.
Not going to be the intercom with US. There was a lot of teething troubles in those days with the first aircraft.
Particularly with the intercom?
Well, no, generally, technically, because everything was ironed out. It was the first time they'd flown. You can test them as much as you like over England, but until you fly them on operations and doubt them a bit, various little things crop up.
How much confidence did you have in your pilot?
Oh, 100%.
Then we come to August 1942, 12th of August. This is an attack on Essen.
Yes, now that was the occasion when the Duke of Gloucester was visiting the unit. And so we took off, Costello Bowen and me, just singled, a high-level raid on the Krupp at Essen. Now, if you're on daylight, contrails that the aircraft make, when you're over the North Sea, you fly up until you make contrails, then you come down until you don't make them. So any fighter running above you will be making them, you could spot them. We got there at dawn and bombed and hit the Kruppswerk. And when I look back, there's three contrail spiders coming down. So we dived down, there was a cloud at 8,000 feet, and we were coming back over the Dutch Islands, and we poked our nose out once, and there was a couple of spiders right behind us. But clouds started breaking up when we were on the Dutch Islands at the mouth of the shark. We dived down low level, and the spiders... They did catch us then, because I say they don't like going too far. And on the way back, we passed the Junkers 88 that was coming back from, obviously, Mineland around Yarmouth. We told after there were three squadrons up after us because they didn't like Essen being bombed in daylight. But lucky the cloud was there.
Now we come to an important operation... 25th of August 1942.
Yes.
Can you tell me what happened then?
Well, that was the three aircraft. There was a Squadron Leader Ralston, Squadron Leader Parry, and Costello Bowen, now Flight Lieutenant Costello Bowen, and me. I was a warrant officer then. We took off, I think, about 7:30 in the evening, and we went in formation. Lower level to the Dutch Islands again, then we split up individually. our own target was the switching station at Vorheide near Cologne, you see, again. And just after crossing the coast where they obviously fired at you, and you kept low over the top of the woods, suddenly an electric pylon loomed up, and we couldn't, we couldn't miss it, and the starboard engine struck the pylon right at the top. It jammed the controls, the engine stopped. Costello said to me, "Look, can't do anything, the controls are jammed." So there we were, full load of bombs and petrol on board, 240 miles an hour, just going to wait until you hit the ground. I said to Costello, "Boeing, well, this is it." And he said, "Yes." And just waited there, and gradually got lower and lower, and then the pine trees loomed up, and the nose must have gone in right between the two. Mosquito bin wooden construction. Now, just before we crashed, I was strapped in, I instinctively pulled my harness. Why, I don't know. The next thing I knew, everything went black and I tumbled like a ball. And when I sort of woke up, it was then a petrol in the atmosphere, bits of aircraft all around, and I didn't have a scratch. I looked behind, and Costello Bones about 20 yards away in some more wreckage, and he was still unconscious. So I slapped his face and talked to him, and eventually he came round. He'd hurt his ankle, both his shoes had been torn off by the rattle pedals. So we went about pouring, couldn't set fire to it because the bits and pieces were all over the place. Didn't have any matches anyway. And lucky it didn't catch fire and the bombs go. Normally it would have done. And we went 400 yards away and sat there, thought things over, felt very despondent, thought we were going to be prisoners of war. But we knew we were out in the open, knew where we were. And the best thing to do is to make your way as far away from the crash as possible. And we started walking out. Costello said to me he didn't feel up to it, and I could go alone. So I said, "Well, I'll go then." Got about 10 yards down the road. No, I can't leave him. Then we had our medical pack with us, and we knew we'd been told a benzodiazepine tablet would do the trick. So a benzodiazepine tablet ate, and he can walk much better now. And away we went. Keeping not on the road, we got down the road and someone came along. It was dusk now, and we dived in the hedge. They didn't see us. Then we made our way along the side of the fields. Now you've got to wait and find a suitable hiding place before dawn. It's no good being caught in the open in daylight. So eventually found a place with a Christmas tree size, about 5 foot high, about 100 yards by now. So we went in there and put ourselves down and went to sleep.
This was in Belgium, was it?
Yes, this is about 20 miles east of Antwerp.
And when you awoke?
Well, when we awoke, we decided that we'd have a little recce and walk to the more or less the edge of the wood, but not where we could see out, and went round the corner and eventually saw a hutted camp. And we looked out, they couldn't see us, and we saw nurses going around, and we watched it for about 4 hours, no German soldiers, so decided it must be a hospital, and went and knocked at the door of the first hut. The nurse came and saw us, was a bit shocked, and we said RAF, and then an English speaking nurse came and took us in, and they sent for a doctor who spoke English. We had a boiled egg, and he said, "What do you want to do?" So he said, well, he knew all about the crash. He said, "Well, there is an escape organisation, and the best way to get in touch with it is go round the cafes or restaurants around the railway station in Antwerp. Eventually, you know, we were to hear and something might happen." Well, they said, "Well, what we'll do for you then, you go back in your place, and there's an English-speaking nurse, you stay there all day, show us where it is, and she'd pass along the edge of the wood at 6 o'clock at night, and she'd bring a sandwich, a tomato sandwich and a bottle of water, and she'd give us the news." Well, our first night there was a Tuesday. On the Wednesday she came, the Thursday and the Friday, nothing had happened. And she said, "Well, we hadn't found anybody yet, so if you get discovered here, they might think people have been helping you here and reprisal, so perhaps you better go. So we said, right, we'll go away as soon as it gets dark. And when it got dark, we moved out, got about 50 yards down the road, and another nurse came running after us. It's all right, somebody's coming tomorrow night. It's 6 o'clock. And somebody came at 6 o'clock that next evening, a long day. They brought a couple of tajy cases with a couple of suits in, shirt, tie, and razor. And we changed, buried our battle dress, and shaved. And they said, you'll need this attache case. And there's a young girl. So we thanked the other people, another woman there, thanked them, and said, well, thank you very much. We didn't want to know their names, because if you get captured, they might, under certain circumstances, be able to get the names out of you, and you'd probably wipe out the line. So I said, well, I don't know. I said, where are we going now? And I said, dear, when I see the person, I might blush up. He said, well, treat it as though you're in a strange town in England, where you don't speak, only speak when I speak to you, but don't speak at all. And we went down the road to a restaurant. And we had a beer there, plenty of German soldiers around. Then we caught a train. She bought the ticket into Antwerp. On the outskirts of Antwerp, we were stopped. The tram stopped and the police boarded. They weren't looking for paper, just black market. Into Antwerp, got off the tram, followed the lady discreetly at a distance, and she took us to a doctor's house, where we had a cold bath and a boiled egg to get our tummies used to food again. And the next morning, guy took us, and he took us from Antwerp to Brussels. Well, it's only a short journey, and no papers needed there. There we went to stay with an old lady who said, you'd be safe in this street. They raided it and took all the Jews and suspects away last week. And this was our first toast taste of doughy bread and acorn coffee and dandelion salad, but it was all right. The next day, a lady called for us, and we were going down to the Bon Marsh to have our photos taken on the machine for our identity cards. Just going inside the store, I was in front, the German officer put his hand on my shoulder and said something. I didn't know what he said. He turned away, and the guys came up and said they're closing. It was a narrow shave, but I didn't want words at all. It was only Costello Bowen and me with her. So we went down the next night, and everything was all right. Took photographs, came back. And the next day, we were taken down to a young family, and we stayed there the night. The next morning, the guide came for us, and we went to the station at Brussels to catch a train to Lille, not to Paris, where they think people would go, escapers. And we were told to Johnson, his name was, I found out afterwards. He said, follow me onto the train and sit as near as possible. And he bought us a couple of magazines, like Picture Post. He said, have a look at these, and whoever you're sitting with won't probably talk to you. We got underway, and eventually came along the people on the train with the Gestapo and the police, and Costello Bowen gave his card up. That was all right. The guide gave his. He was sitting next to him. Then I was sitting next to a Belgian who was dressed in a black German uniform, a swastika on. They questioned him and took him away. Then it was my turn. So I got the identity card. Pierre, I remember, and he handed it back, said something else. I didn't clue what he said, so I gave him the railway ticket. And he said something else. I don't know, nothing else. I went, but it didn't mean yes and didn't mean no. He handed them back to me and went on. The guy told me later, he said, well, I go into the mill to work in the mines, but that satisfied him. Then we get on to the Spanish, the French, Belgian border, where all off the train, and you just search for, open the cases for black market. On to the, where did we go? Gare du Nord, on to Lille, where we get off and have a nice little lunch in the restaurant there, then down to the Gare du Nord in Paris, where we're taken to a nice little flat. There's three others there as well, that's five of us, and this chap, I said, the grub's really good. Well, he said, look here, and he turned the picture on the wall over, and there's a photograph of Hitler behind there. He said, when you've gone, I should be entertaining German soldiers for a few weeks so they don't suspect me of helping Air Force people escape. And he said, that's where all the good food's coming from, the German army. Well, we went along to a flat one day, and I know now, I find that it's Freddie de Jong, his daughter Dee Dee's head of the line. And there they were stamping our passes at the Atlantic Wall pass. You had to have special passes for that. Anyway, on the Sunday evening, I'm to go out and go along to a jeweler's about 50 yards along. And there I see a lady with a red hat looking in the window, which is Madame, and she was my guide to the Gerti Ostrich. We duly met her down to the metro, and we were sitting in the... and two German soldiers were opposite us across the table, and one of them leant over to me and said something, and I didn't know what he was talking about. The guide answered and gave me a nudge, and the next station we got out. She said he wanted to know where to change. She said, I thought it was safer to get out in case he wondered, and we went on foot to the Gerti Ostrich. Now we get the Gare du Ostrich, and you sort of wait by the barrier until they open the platform, and the tannoy's going out, Achtung, and police and Gestapo around, and we meet up with Freddy de Jong, Johnson the guide, and there's four of us. Eventually it opens, show our passes, and in we go. Now this is the cheekiest thing of a lot. We had a reserve compartment, and when we got there was French people in it. And Freddy de Jong, who was our chief, he went up and got the German commander of the train and the French chap and got them turfed out and we could sit in. Away we go. This is night, 10 o'clock at night. They looked in for papers. Everything went all right. And the German commander of the train, he even poked his nose in later on and wished us a pleasant evening. Now, we got to St. John de Luz in the morning, and there's only one exit to go out. And over the outside there, there's each side there's German and French checking the passes. And you form a queue. And we were told if any invaded, Eddie got stopped. And to run along the platform over the low wall, get into the town. As a matter of fact, we all got through. They checked the front of me. And we went to a safe house, followed the guide there.